In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's one of the great traditions in not only college sports, but all of sport in the world. It's Script Ohio. It's Ohio State Buckeyes. And joining us is somebody who just took part in that great tradition just a few weeks ago on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is as iconic as it gets in college football. Two-time Heisman Trophy winner, Archie Griffin, Buckeye legend. And he joins us now. Archie, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
All right, what was that like? You've had a lot of moments throughout your career, your post-career. You've been celebrated. You've got statues not only in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl, but also the Shoe. But you got to dot the I, something a very, very privileged few have been able to do.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. You know, I had no idea that I would ever have the opportunity to dot the I in front of folks that were in Ohio Stadium. It came true. I mean, I never thought it would happen, but it came true, and it was unbelievable. My whole family pretty much were there. It was everything I expected it to be after I was notified that I'd get to do it. So it was fabulous.
All right, when you were doing it, were there any nerves? Because I have seen in the past camera guys or people that are on the field that shouldn't be get decked by the sousaphone when they violently turn around and go through their motion.
Oh, no, I wasn't expecting that to happen, for sure. As a matter of fact, I went over to one of the band's practice a couple of days before dotting the I just to see what I would be doing. And even then, when they started doing the Script Ohio, I got a little enamored with them doing the Script Ohio, watching them do it, and I almost forgot to go out there when I was supposed to go out there. And the sousaphone player, the drum major kind of nudged me a little bit and told, come on, and I had to hurry up to catch up with him. So yeah, it was a little nerve wracking a bit.
Is Script Ohio the favorite of your pregame traditions?
Oh, it really is. One of the things that I also love is seeing the band come down the ramp. I mean, that is something that to me is very, very exciting. And when you play the game, you never see that because you're always in the locker room. But I'll never forget when I had the opportunity to really see it when I got through playing at Ohio State. I thought that was absolutely outstanding. And to see the drum major drop back and bend all the way back and have his hat touch the ground, That's incredible as well.
How staggering is it? And we're talking to Archie Griffin right now, and you know, lifelong Ohio guy. You understand football in this football crazed state better than almost anybody. That all these years later, for a Columbus kid and an Ohio kid like you, that you are still this firmly entrenched with Buckeye football. That all these years later, you are still so highly regarded and being able to take part in the great traditions at Ohio State.
It's really a wonderful feeling. I mean, I was born right there at Ohio State University Hospital, the Webster Medical Center now, but, you know, it's absolutely unbelievable. When I was a kid, lived in the Linden area, me and a couple buddies, we used to go over to Ohio State and watch the pregame activities and stand behind the fence and try to watch through the fence and things of that sort. So for me to have that opportunity to actually go to Ohio State and then play there, and then, what, 50 years later, being honored the way that the university honored me, which was absolutely phenomenal, you know, it's been great. It's been absolutely great. It's something that, again, I'm glad that I'm here to enjoy.
Was there ever any at all consideration about any other school when you were young?
Oh, absolutely. I really didn't think Ohio State would recruit me because when I was in high school and when I was coming up through junior high school, they really didn't have a lot of Columbus, Ohio public school players at Ohio State. I know when I was a senior at Ohio State, they had one guy by the name of Larry Wiggins who went to Marion Franklin High School here in Columbus. And that was the only Columbus kid that I remember being right there at the Ohio State University on the team. So I really didn't think that they would recruit me. So when I was playing high school football, one of the schools that I was very interested in was Northwestern University because I liked the fact that it was a small school and the fact that they were pretty good at the time. As a matter of fact, my senior year in high school, Northwestern, I think they finished second in the Big Ten, but they had beaten Ohio State at Ohio State. And they were very, very interested in me. The school up north was very, very interested in me. As a matter of fact, when Bo Schembechler was living, I sat on a board with him for the National Football Foundation Honors Court. And Bo used to tell me all the time, Woody would never have recruited you if I hadn't recruited you first. And I never thought about that, but, you know, maybe there's some truth to that. But Ohio State did recruit me. Rudy Hubbard was the backfield coach at the time, and he recruited me. And Esko Sarkinen was the guy that recruited the Columbus area. And they came over to some of our practices. I know Esko Sarkinen came over to some of our practices. And my high school football coach told me that Ohio State was really interested in me. And I'll never forget Coach A's calling over to Eastmore High School. It was after the football season of my senior year. I was in wrestling practice, and he called the wrestling coach and asked if he could speak to me before I went out to practice. And the wrestling coach came in the locker room, got me, told me Woody Hayes was on the phone, and I really didn't believe him, but I went into his office, got on the phone, and lo and behold, it was Coach Woody Hayes. And I remember him inviting me to dinner that night, and I remember being all excited, hurrying home after practice to go to dinner with Coach Hayes. And I got there, and we had a good conversation, but I really didn't think he was really that interested because really all he talked about was an education and the importance of getting the education. And I was thinking, well, maybe he looked at me, considered me to be very small, and was no longer interested. But the fact of the matter is Coach Hayes was a man who was really concerned about education, and he wanted to make sure that the athletes that came to Ohio State wanted to make sure that they got a good education. And I'm so glad that he did that because that was so very important as well.
Archie Griffin, join us on the hotline. Just quickly on Woody, is there anything that you think all these years later people get wrong when it comes to Woody Hayes?
Well, I think he was a great football coach, no question about it, but I really think that he was a better person than he was a coach. And I say that because the man was a great leader, but what's most important about him was that he cared a great deal about the people. That's what was so impressive about Coach Woody Hayes. You could go to Coach Woody Hayes and you have a problem, he would do whatever he could to help you with that problem. I hear all the time about former athletes who played for Coach Hayes who came to him and had some problems, and he helped them out, somehow made ways for things to happen for them so that they could get over those problems or get over a hurdle that they were going through at the time. I mean, Coach Hayes was just that type of person. And when I talked about education earlier, he meant that. I mean, there's so many guys that left school without their degree that he called them up and told them they need to get back in school, and he would be on them all the time about going back to school, and they would come back and they would finish and they would get their degree because Coach Hayes was on their case, and they knew that he cared and he wasn't going to stop until he got that degree.
Archie Griffin joining us on the show. You're a two-time Heisman Trophy winner. Does it mean, how much does it mean to you to be the special one out of the Heisman Trophy family that has won two? Is it something that, like, Lyman and I kind of made a little bit of a passing joke, nothing serious, about Tim Tebow and the possibilities that he had of winning two at one point. How much does it mean to you to be the only two-time winner?
Well, you know, just to be a two-time winner, it certainly is special. I don't look at it as being any more special than anybody else, to be honest with you. I'm honored for the fact that I've been able to win two Heisman Trophies. But I got to tell you, I look at that Heisman Trophy, those Heisman Trophies, as team awards. I truly was in the right place at the right time with the right people. I mean, I played with some truly outstanding players who I always say made me look good enough to win two Heisman Trophies. And I'm so very, very thankful for that. But, you know, it's special to have two. I mean, I'm certainly special to have one. To have two is, I guess, a little extra special. You know, I don't worry about it as much as other people worry about it. I know when I'm in New York during the Heisman season, when they're getting ready to announce the Heisman Award winners, if somebody had won it their junior year or won it their sophomore year and they're back the next year, when they announce the winner, my phone goes off with people telling me that, oh, you're still the only one that won it. But, yeah, so it's certainly special. But I don't look at it as anything more special than having won it once. But I'm certainly glad that I've got two of them. And it really speaks for the teams that I played on during my time at Ohio State University.
I was going to ask if you popped the champagne like Mercury Morris every year that, like, Jameis or Caleb Williams or Manziel didn't win it. But it seems like you would not be that kind of guy.
No, I don't do that. But I would not say that my friends don't do that. So.
Archie Griffin joining us on the show. So, well, what are the prospects of this year's Buckeyes here? Is the sky the limit for this team? Because, boy, I know they haven't played the stiffest competition in the first two games, but it looks like, man, they are razor sharp.
You know, the expectation is really off the charts for this team, and there's some great talent on this team. And the key to this team is going week to week. I mean, taking it game by game, focusing in on those games. Because the talent's there to really go all the way. I want to first win that Big Ten and then look at that playoff and just, again, take it game by game. But there are going to be some challenges on the way. I like the way that, in my opinion, the way that they improved from game one to game two. I mean, I thought that was a big improvement. Especially on the offensive side of football. I mean, I thought that was phenomenal, and I like that, and I'm hoping that those guys will continue to improve the way that they've improved from game one to game two.
Now, obviously, the sport continues to change. I mean, I'm looking at old highlights of you in 74 in the Rose Bowl against USC, and now that is going to be, if not a yearly thing, I mean, Ohio State could see USC here and there in the Big Ten slate. How crazy is it for you to think about that and how the Big Ten is no longer your Big Ten?
Well, you know, you knew that things were going to change from an NCAA standpoint, from a college football standpoint, and from a Big Ten standpoint when you saw that the SEC added Texas and Oklahoma and some other teams. So you knew the Big Ten was going to grow. I just did not expect them to go from East Coast to West Coast. I thought it would be more Midwestern. But the fact of the matter is we are from coast to coast. It's a change. I know Coach A is probably rolling over in his grave knowing that, seeing that the change. But it is here, and it's something that we've got to deal with. I think it's a phenomenal conference now when you look at the schools that are in the Big Ten. I think it's a great conference, and I think this is a conference that's going to compete each and every year for a national title with the teams that we have in this conference. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm excited about it, to be honest with you.
I didn't know how it would look, but I actually totally agree with you, Archie, about the Big Ten. Archie, we can't thank you enough for the time. Enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon, sir.
I look forward to it. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Archie Griffin, two-time Heisman Trophy winner on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mary Kay Cabot joins us right now to not just talk about Jaguars, but everything else going on, as well as Deshaun Watson. She joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. She's from the Cleveland Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. Mary Kay, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing okay. Okay, we got to start off. We got to start off with this latest lawsuit here. Kevin Stefanski said he wasn't aware. The NFL is looking into it. Lisa Friel, I believe is her name, is looking into it. The last time she looked into it, it led to a 6, then an 11-game suspension when the NFL brought in Sue L. Robinson. Where are we at right now with all this? With Deshaun Watson, this lawsuit, whatever with the NFL and his future with this football team?
Well, the NFL has to determine if this incident or alleged incident is different, substantially different enough to warrant further discipline under the personal conduct policy, because they had an agreement the first time around that anything else that arose from that time period that was similar was going to fall under the 11-game suspension and the $5 million fine. So that's what Lisa Friel has to determine. And what she will attempt to do is interview the plaintiff, and she will interview Deshaun. And this one, I'm sure, can get very tricky because, well, they all were this way, but it is her word against his word. So I think it might end up being difficult to determine exactly what happened on that evening, if anything, whatever. So that's going to be incumbent upon Lisa to do that. And if they do feel that this was different enough, then they could suspend him for another how many ever games, or fine him more, or put him back into therapy or treatment. So I think it's just a wait-and-see proposition right now. And what can happen on the other end of it is that the two attorneys can get together and come up with a settlement. And if they do that, then I believe that the league would probably back off of any further discipline. So I'm not sure exactly what Rusty Harden and Tony Busby are talking about at the moment, but a settlement is something that I'm sure they are going to discuss.
Do you think it matters to Friel the way that Watson's behavior had been characterized in the NFL ruling that was eventually handed down by Sue L. Robinson, that she used the term, you know, predatory, and it was such, just the language was so ugly. Does that factor in? Because right now, it's like he said, she said in what is a civil case, and you know, what can they really find out beyond that?
Right. Unless there were some video or audio evidence or something like that, it is going to remain a he said, she said situation. But I do think that his previous cases, his previous history, will factor into this. That doesn't exist in a vacuum. So they're going to have to take a look at all of that and ask themselves if this is, you know, showing more of the same, or if this was something different that needs to be further penalized. So they have a tough order to try to sort this out.
Mary Kay, what did you think yesterday when Kevin Stefanski said this was kind of news to him? Deshaun Watson and his kind of casual attitude about it during the press conference. What did you make of that reaction?
Well, I don't think that Kevin Stefanski was apprised of every single thing, every single case, every single alleged incident. I don't know that he was privy to all of that information that went on before the Browns traded for Deshaun Watson. So I don't think he could say, oh, yes, I knew that this happened. I mean, I really think that.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's exactly what he needed to say in that moment, and I believe that that was accurate. So it doesn't mean that the Browns didn't know. It doesn't mean that the NFL didn't know. It doesn't mean that his contract is going to be null and void just because Kevin sat up there and said, I wasn't aware of the allegations. So I think we have to kind of be a little bit careful of reading too much into that. In terms of Deshaun not knowing, I think basically what Tony Busby is trying to say, oh, yes, he knew about the incident at the time that it happened, and also he knew that we have been trying to settle this case for the past 10 months. Well, I don't necessarily know if that part is true, the latter, because I know I did talk to Rusty Harden myself in October of 2022 when the 26th lawsuit was filed. And at that point, he had drawn a line in the sand and they were done. They had already negotiated the 11 games, the $5 million penalty. Deshaun was in the midst of that suspension at the time, and they had decided they were not going to pay out any more money. And so I think part of this situation is an outgrowth of that stance that they took, that hardline stance that we're done doing this. We're not, if we think that the lawsuit doesn't have merit, we're not going to just keep opening the wallet and paying out a bunch of money. So I don't know that he even brought this to Deshaun's attention that, hey, Tony Busby is trying to get $1 million for this person. I don't know if Deshaun necessarily knew that. So, you know, there are a lot of gray areas. I thought Deshaun did a really good job with fielding a bunch of questions that the Browns didn't want him to field and that his attorney didn't want him to field. And I thought he handled it really well. But, yeah, well, I mean, we just don't know where this is going to go yet, basically.
If he were suspended, would that open the Browns up to voiding his contract?
Probably. Yeah, I would say that that would open the door for perhaps something like that happening, because it's new sanctions, new penalties against him, and by that point the league would have decided that this was substantially different enough to warrant further sanctions. So I would guess that that probably would rise to the level of the Browns at least trying to get out of it at that point.
Now, it's been thrown out there, and yeah, this happened on Monday. This is the first chance we get to talk to you, so you may have given this answer to some other shows, wherever, written about it. I'm sorry, Mary Kay. Is there a possibility that the other owners in some way might block a suspension or whatever because they don't want them to be able to void his contract because of the fully guaranteed money? Like, that was something Mike Florio had pointed out there, and I'm like, well, I don't know if that's always the case.
No, I don't think so. I don't see anything like that happening. I don't think that the other owners are going to get involved in this business between the NFL and the Cleveland Browns. I don't think they would appreciate owners banding together and doing that for one of their own incidents, and you don't want to set that kind of precedent. So I don't see anything like that happening. And I also might add right now that even Deshaun said this yesterday during his press conference, the Browns are standing behind him. He has got the full support of his football team right now, that he 100% has gotten just support and confidence from the Haslams, from Andrew Berry, and they're not looking to get out of his contract right now. What they want is for things to work out, for Deshaun to get back on that field and be the quarterback that they believe that he is. So they're not trying to get out of this. They're not hoping they can get out of this. They're hoping the opposite, that things work out well for everyone involved, or better for everyone involved, and that he can get back to playing football.
Mary Kay with us on the show. Do they believe that he can get back to 2020 form, or do they believe that there's limitations there because of the time, because of the injuries?
I think that they still have full faith that he can be the quarterback that they traded for. I'm looking forward to asking Ken Dorsey some of these questions this morning, too, just about where Deshaun is at. But I don't think that they – I know the national and local narrative right now is that he's completely broken, lost, and hopeless. And I just don't – I don't really believe that that's true. I don't believe that that's true. I actually – when I rewatched the game, I thought I saw more things in that game that led me to believe that this was just a collective offensive meltdown and a recipe for disaster against a really, really good defense and a really arguably – one of the two best pass rushers in the NFL in Micah Parsons, along with Myles Garrett, and he wrecked that game. I thought Mike Zimmer came in with an amazing game plan. I thought the fact that Deshaun was always in second and long, third and long, every time you turned around there was a penalty or another penalty or a drop. So a lot of it was on him. Yes, a lot of it was on him. But it was an absolute collective meltdown on the part of the offense, and they've got to look in the mirror this week and figure out where it all went wrong and how they can get it fixed very quickly.
Mary Kay, a week ago at this time, we were hearing from Ken Dorsey about how they basically had a unicorn in a quarterback that could make throws no one else could make. We heard from Kevin Stefanski about how confident they were. We heard from Quincy Avery, who said this might be the best Deshaun Watson's ever thrown the ball, maybe the best velocity. We had heard from Deshaun Watson, who said that he thought he was an elite quarterback and had no doubts about that. Was that just lip service? Was that everybody just trying to get their confidence up, or do they truly believe that?
No, they truly believe that, and I think it was probably last week when you guys asked me if he didn't play well, what did that mean? And I said it means it's the first week in a brand-new offense with a quarterback coming off of a shoulder surgery that no other NFL quarterback has ever had before.
Why didn't they say that, Mary Kay? Because that would have been understandable. That would have people feeling maybe not as bad today as they did. Instead, it feels like they've been lied to.
Well, you don't go into a game saying, hey, geez, we're just not really sure about this. I mean, like, who would do that? The Cowboys are coming to town, national television, and they didn't even believe that. I'm just saying that I believe that. I don't think that they believed that. I think they believed that they had a good scheme, a good game plan, a good quarterback, and a good supporting cast, and that it was going to go a whole lot better than it did. But from the first drive on, there were penalties, there were drops, there were slips. It was just basically kind of a disaster, and they could never pull out of it. By the time you get down 20-3, your running game is hardly viable anymore. And then you give up a 60-yard punt return, and what do you think is going to happen when you're down 27-3? They're going to tee off, and that is exactly what they did. And sometimes a game gets away from you. It doesn't necessarily mean that your quarterback is hopeless, lost, broken, finished. It doesn't mean that. Now, maybe he is. Maybe he is, and maybe what everyone saw on Sunday is what he's going to be. But I don't know. I don't believe that right now. I think it's too soon to completely write the whole thing off.
I would agree with you, Mary Kay, about all of that. I sincerely believe you and agree with you, because that's what I said on Monday, that I don't think this is the end of the world. I don't think it proves that Deshaun is gone. I just think from the fan perspective, they seem like they were building this up as if, wait till you guys see what we do in the opener, when how could they possibly believe that? We all know how little they did, how the fact that Deshaun didn't get any live reps, that he hadn't been hit, that he had surgery. Football's hard. They're a really good defensive line going up against an O-line that hadn't really had any continuity because of the injuries. I guess I get being confident because you're an athlete and that's the safe way to play, but I also almost seemed to me like they were saying things that even they couldn't believe.
Well, do you think the Cowboys should have come in here and said, oh, geez, you know what? Dak's mind's not right. We haven't signed him to his new contract yet. We don't know where his mindset is going to be when he's in here. And, geez, CD, we signed him so late in the program. He never had any reps with Dak. And, you know, we just don't know what those two are going to look like together. And for the first time in the history of the Cowboys, we are starting two rookies on the offensive line, and one of them is going to have to go up against Myles Garrett, and my goodness, we might as well just not even go to Cleveland right now, because this is going to be an absolute disaster. I mean, no, I mean, that's not how you approach a football game. No matter what's going on. You go in there, you go in confident, you go in with your game plan, and you hope that it's going to work out the way that you want it to. And in this case with the Browns, it absolutely didn't. But you don't go in saying, geez, we don't really know if this is going to work out.
Final one here. We're going to do rock, paper, scissors decide who asked you.
Yes.
You ready? We're going to do rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Yes.
You ready?
Yep.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Go. Have at it, Kenny.
Have you looked into the matter of Leroy Bickerstaff?
No, I haven't. I haven't, but I will say this. First of all, Deshaun does not strike me as the kind of person that would do his own burner account. I'm not saying that people's surrounding camp would never do something like that, and I'm not saying that they would, but I just don't see him as a person that would run his own burner account.
I don't think so either. I think it's personally, we talked about it yesterday. I said I think a fan is having some fun with other fans on social media right now.
Yeah,
is my thought.
I don't see it. Again, you know, sometimes people around a player will do some things. I doubt that happened either, but you're right. I think it's probably a fan.
Feels like the type of work that a slippery wizard might do, but that's for another day. Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the very best.
Sure. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, Kenny, it came off to me last week when the Browns talked is that they were saying things they didn't believe. I know that was at the root of what we were just arguing about. Mary Kay says they do believe it. They're a football team. They have to believe that way so that they can go out and play a football game. I just think they were overcompensating. They were going over the top in trying to get people to know how good they were and how great Deshaun Watson was, how not limited Deshaun Watson was, when our eyes told us a very different story, like, immediately.
Did you come to that conclusion in hindsight or as you were hearing it?
You heard me last week. I couldn't...
No, we played them side by side. You're right.
I couldn't understand why they were trying to sell us on how there were no limitations and how they were... That offense, despite the fact that we knew they had barely been able to work on things, how they were going to introduce an entirely new offense and have it be where it needed to be for week one against a really tough defensive front.
I know why. They know what we say. They are in tune to what we say as much as they say. And I'm not saying like Kevin Stefanski's driving into work listening to us. Like, no, that's not the case. They are in tune to what we, the assembled fans, media, the greater fandom say. They know what we say, and they know that over the last 8 months of the offseason, there was just so many questions. There was criticisms. You know, I brought up myself. I go, no, if I own the Browns, I'm not, I know the investment I made in Joe Flacco. I'm not bringing, or in Deshaun Watson, I'm not bringing Joe Flacco back. There's people walking around Joe Flacco jerseys going, boo my quarterback if he doesn't play well, because he hasn't played that well. So I got to see this thing through as far as I can. I think Joe Flacco played really well. I don't mean any disrespect. I just got to tell you guys the truth of the matter. And they knew they had to sell the quarterback to the fans. And Lima, you called it out. I mean, read what you read from Patrick Mahomes. Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah,
read what you read from Patrick Mahomes. This is before the Ravens game.
This is the back-to-back champion of the NFL.
Okay.
And the best player
going
on the planet in football.
Here. 4 out of 5.
And they're asking him about where he is mentally and going up against the Ravens. And he went and praised nonstop how physical they were. And they're like, we could get dominated if we don't come out and we play really hard. We can't let them push us around because they can dominate the game. He also said last year, not much in the mind. You're so focused on trying to get better. You're playing the best of the best week one. We're going to see where we're at. We're going to have to go out there and play our best football early in the season. Like, this is a bunch of player speak. Right? This is a bunch of,
right,
we respect our opponents. What he's not saying is, wait till you see the offense. Oh, I'm an elite quarterback. I've got no limitation. Like, you're just not seeing that because he doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to say it. The Browns have to say it because you didn't see anything all preseason. Didn't see a lick of anything from him. Didn't even know who the left tackle was going to be to start
right?
the game.
That's exactly right.
Still don't know who the left tackle is going to be to start this game.
That's true, too.
I don't want to compare the organizations because I'm not saying the Browns are some, you know, upstart organization or don't know what they're doing, but one's the peak of professionality in football, right? Just things happen. They didn't have a great offseason in Kansas City when it comes to stories, and it doesn't matter because when it's time to play football, that's where the focus is, and that's all there is. That's not what's happening in Cleveland.
You guys are right. They should have probably spoken softer and carried a bigger stick. However, let me just say this for one thing. So I'm Ken's making excuses to the Browns again. The Chiefs speak for themselves. I mean, you just said it. Back-to-back champs going for a three-peat. Mahomes is probably, by the time it's all said and done, going to be the best to ever do it. They speak for themselves. The Browns, yeah, all those questions that we brought up over the last 8 months, they had to speak for themselves. Did they have to speak to that level? No. No. Because Ken Dorsey's saying, what did he say? Oh, there's going to be some things out there you ain't going to believe. Yeah, there was a lot of things on Sunday that
throw,
I had.
Yeah, the throw to CeeDee Lamb was a throw nobody else could make.
I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe it.
So do you think, and it's interesting because I think we're on the same page on this.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily know the why of what they're doing. We kind of have our theories around it. Is there a chance they truly thought they were going to be unbelievable and they just didn't realize how hard this is going to be? This is not it, for any team in their situation, by the way. Here's why I say that.
For
any quarterback coming off surgery, for any line that has that left tackle situation, then you're going up against Micah Parsons and Lawrence. Like, very, very tough. The fact that you're overhauling the offense, these are hard things.
They are, and they did not firmly believe that. I will tell you from what I saw, from what I observed, to who I talked to this entire preseason. I wasn't even there as much as I have been in the past because they've spent more time at the Greenbrier again. But I'm telling you right now, they did not expect that. You know Kevin. I know Kevin. Do you think he's that type of guy? Not a chance in hell. Not a chance. I mean, let's pull back the curtains here. You and I both know the man. Do we think that he's that way? Nope. Mm-mm. No. They did not truly think that. And I went nuts on Monday. Not that nuts even about the performance. It was about the comparison and other things like that. And I just wasn't ready to hear it. But I made this big thing. I ain't going to make any excuses. And I didn't. And it was tough talking Ken time. It wasn't over what Ken Dorsey said. I don't think I mentioned Ken Dorsey. Go back and check the transcripts. I didn't mention Ken Dorsey's press conference once. It was, I know what you're capable of. And I know about this preseason. And even then, you failed to meet those expectations. Even then, you failed to play the way you played. And now I'm afraid of the quarterback where you're, listen to me, I'm turtling up over here and I'm saying, hey, maybe we need to bring the offense in a little bit. Maybe we need to do this a little bit where we bring the line of scrimmage, where we bring the goals closer to the line of scrimmage here and shorten up this offense for Deshaun Watson. Maybe we should talk to him about staying within a structure here. I mean, you're hearing it come out of my mouth. Mary Kay could sit there and say, we're not in savior mode. No offense to Mary Kay, love her. I totally disagreed. I totally disagreed with about eight sentences she said in a row there. I'm going, man, I don't want to freak out over this, but this is our future. Whatever you want to think about Deshaun Watson, the guy's our future. Whatever, and he's going to have to play. You can blame the offensive line. Maybe the offensive line's going to suck. He still has to play with him. And when he was in Houston, he played with a bad offensive line. But he was more physically capable of doing things that he did in Houston than he is now. So now I know that he can play, or he should have to play in a system here. You had other guys come in. I'm sick and tired of talking about Joe Flacco as much as anybody else, because that's never happening again. Good for Joe, nice guy too, but it's never happening again. But what did Joe prove? What did he prove? That if you play within a system and you take care of the football, well, you can win football games. If you don't, and he didn't in the final game they played together, then you're going to have some struggles there. And that's what they did. If you get rid of the football, if you run the right route, if you do the right thing, you can take care of each other. That's what he's going to have to do now. And unless he proves me wrong.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.